WTFR.
We are sick and tired of the New York media dominating and controlling the news around the world. We are sick and tired of having to keep silent as the white genocide continues. Well, we're not remaining silent anymore. Scream from the fucking rooftops with Mike Sledge here on News White People Can Use, where truth and real news is called anti-Semitic.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. Welcome, everybody, to White News, right here on WTFR Radio, where thought is free radio. And I want to welcome those listening on 107.9 FM in the Rocky Alpines and 1650 AM in Buffalo, New York. So, welcome to the broadcast tonight. It's going to be a good broadcast. I have great news to report. one of our favorite anti-white fuckers, one of our favorite anti-white kikes, just about 2 days ago, fortunately passed away. And that was Professor Noel Ignatieff. And, good riddance. Let's break out the bottles of Manischewitz here. Oh, God, don't do that. That's worse than grape nigger Kool-Aid. Please don't break out the bottle of Manischewitz. Maybe we can go to his gravesite if he hasn't been cremated, and we can pour some Manischewitz for my nigger, Professor Nolan Native. Pour out a little liquor, my nigger. A little Manischewitz. Oy vey! So, yeah. But to start out the show, to start out the broadcast, I wanted to, I have a clip here, a tribute to Professor Ignatieff. And, hey, Sean, if you could play that clip, this is my tribute to Professor.
Just one second there, Mike. We've got some typing going on in the background. I think it's Tabitha. She can't hear what's going on in the network. And I'm pretty sure that's her typing. That's and it's cutting.
I thought it was Noel Ignatieff coming back from the grave.
It's cutting your voice out. It's cutting your voice out. So just one moment, bear with me. We're just going to take Tabitha out of the call because she. Go ahead. Okay. So did you want me to play that clip now?
Well, yeah. I was going to say that I thought the tapping was Professor Noel Ignatieff, coming out of the grave to fucking try to take me off the air tonight because he didn't want to hear what I have to say. They don't want to hear what we have to say, folks.
Oy vey.
Yeah, Sean, go ahead and play the clip. All right, my mate. Tribute to Noel. It's the holiday season.
My concern is doing away with whiteness. Whiteness is a form of racial oppression. Sure. The suggestion is that it is somehow possible to separate whiteness from oppression, and it is not. There can be no white race without the phenomenon of white supremacy. In the same way, if you abolish racial oppression, you do away with whiteness. Treason to whiteness is loyalty to humanity.
Your views are fairly well received in academia.
Yes, they're legitimate. Not to say that everyone agrees, but sure. And the task is to bring this minority together in such a way that it makes it impossible for the legacy of whiteness to continue to reproduce itself.
We're losing them. Scalpel. Nurse, get over here. We're losing them. I need a scalpel quick. This son of a bitch is going out on us.
Oy vey. We must end the white people. Oy vey, the tumor. Oy gaval, the tumor is... Oy vey.
God damn it, nurse. I said give me the scalpel. I got it. Oh, he's losing blood quickly. Oh my God. He's gonna die right here on the table. Professor! Professor!
Think they! Think about a dying! We must!
Please help me, white doctor! I am a white doctor. I'm not Jew. I'm different. Son of a bitch, he's gone! He's flatlined!
Dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. Of a white Christmas with every...
All right, yeah, Professor Noel Ignatieff.
The first Noel, the angels did, the King of Israel.
Goodbye, goodbye, fucker. Goodbye, goodbye. You know, this guy, this bastard, was part of the reason why, you know, going back to the Kalergi plan, the Barbara Spector plan for Europe, this guy was a promoter of white genocide. Good riddance. Good riddance. I'm not really a religious guy, but if there is a hell, I hope you're burning in hell for eternity. And I don't believe in hell, but maybe you'll come back maybe we'll be reincarnated as a cow, and you can be sent back to a slaughterhouse.
Oh, God, I thought we escaped. I thought I was a survivor. No, I'm waiting in line in a slaughterhouse.
So, goodbye, Noel. It's the holiday season. I have a recipe for Manischewitz, pumpkin spice Manischewitz for you. anyway. I have a very, very special guest tonight on the broadcast. You know her on this network, White Wellness with Tabitha, and she has an amazing show, a lot of good information, and I thought she could come on as my guest tonight and talk about a variety of topics. Tabitha, can you hear me?
I can, Mike. Good evening.
All right. You sound great. You sound great.
Great.
I apologize. That sounded like Noel Ignatieff from the grave trying to. Are we sure this fucker's dead? Maybe he was a crisis actor. Did they check the ears before he died? I want to know. Folks, Noel Ignatieff is actually still alive. He was an Israeli. He was working with Jeffrey Epstein. He was an Israeli Mossad asset working at the University of Chicago. He is actually still alive. His death was fake. There, he's actually in Tel Aviv drinking margaritas with Epstein and at the Dead Sea. He's deader than a hammer, folks. But anyway, Tabitha, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
Okay, let's rip right into this. You know, I was listening to your show the other night, and you mentioned that the vegan capital of the world was actually in Israel, in Tel Aviv. So
indeed,
I find that very interesting.
Yeah, it really makes you think. It does, but that's where it is. And that's supposed to be like a vegan hotspot, too, for people who are looking for a vacation, perhaps.
Who the hell would want a vacation?
I don't know.
I mean,
not me.
I went to the Bahamas and when I was younger on a cruise and I got back and my friend said, so how was the Bahamas? And I said, are you kidding me? I could have done the same thing in downtown Atlanta. I didn't have to go to the Bahamas to see that. I mean, you know, there's just as much fried chicken and groids walking around in the Bahamas as there. I should have just stayed in Atlanta. Hell, fuck it. But but yeah, it makes sense that Tel Aviv would be the vegan capital of the world because veganism, as you talk about all the time, is basically part of their cultural Marxist agenda. Because it dumbs down the masses. It shrinks the brain. It gets rid of critical thinking skills. It lowers testosterone. And this is being promoted for white people, basically. The blacks, mm-hmm. the Mexicans, the Muslims, they're not following this vegan shit. This is all propaganda put out to destroy our race, our people.
Yeah, I mean, the other races do kind of sometimes fall for it, but it seems that overwhelmingly so, it's a lot of whites. And unfortunately, a lot of whites with like very northern ancestry, the worst candidate, like I said on Tuesday, worst candidate for any diet like this. I mean, their diet's predominantly an animal food diet. So yeah, it's definitely a subset of Tikkun Olam, the vegan diet for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And our ancestors didn't have fucking avocados and mangoes in the icy northern European areas when they were trying to survive. They had fish, they had meat, they had fires, they had protein. This is what we our ancestors this was the diet. This is what makes veganism so ridiculous, is that it relies on a free market, oy vey, capitalist economy in order for it to work. Without the oy vey international finance Jewish capitalism, veganism would not be able to exist in Europe and in the United States. It would be virtually impossible.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It would not be what the local foods were in a certain European country. It would be really hard to do that. You know, you'd really be missing something. If you said you wanted to kind of just go really local and really just close to home, you still wouldn't be able, you'd be limiting yourself. No avocados, no mangoes, none of this. Like if you're in Russia, like, and you're vegetarian, what are you going to eat? Right? Buckwheat, kasha, well, yeah. Right? Vodka? I don't know.
Well, the vodka will help. The vodka will help. Because, you know, at least you can get drunk as you're wasting away on lettuce wraps. And
yeah, it's just,
what are you going to eat? A fucking beet every day?
Yeah, you don't want to overload on too many of those foods either. Like, the whole idea is it's nice to have a bit of everything. But yeah, it's just, it's not sustainable. That's the problem with it. You can just see it's not sustainable in any way, but especially in the health way. I mean, look what's happening to a lot of these people.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the fact, folks, for those that you're listening, you know, this, the rise of the modern day big agriculture economy props up veganism. The rise in wheat production, corn production, soybean production, all of these farms that produce these products are killing more animals than meat eaters ever kill. This is a fact. The animals that have to be killed to protect the soybean crops, to protect the wheat fields, to protect the corn fields, all of this stuff that they eat, it's complete garbage, and it's actually destroying not only the earth, but killing more. Oh, I'm sorry. Destroying the flat earth. It's destroying the flat earth. But it's destroying the earth, and it's killing more animals than a normal diet, Tabitha.
Yeah, and it's also using up all this this land for crops that could be used in more of a regenerative aspect if one was practicing like a regenerative farming modality, you know, using animals, you know, so basically mixing animal husbandry with, you know, the vegetable growing, that type of thing. Then the whole cycle runs by itself. You don't even have to water. When you use mulch and animal poop for your garden, you don't even have to water your garden. So, I mean, you really want to go back to nature. The whole big ag thing is it's built to fail. It's the whole problem, reaction, solution type of thing. They want it to fail. Like I talked about in one show, they're cheering on the fact that big dairy is going to be dead by like 2030 or something like that. They want to abolish this. Then they can say, okay, there's no more meat and dairy. Now you got to eat this.
Yeah, interesting. One of the largest dairy producers in Texas, Dean Farms, is saying that they will be out of business. I actually heard this on the radio a couple days ago. They will be out of business in the next 4 years. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not really a big fan of big dairy. There's a lot of problems there. I know dairy farms where I live in Georgia, but still, I find it very interesting because, you know, you need these dairy fats, these animal fats to have your brain functioning properly. I found that very interesting. I agree with you as well. They're taking up land. Here's my thoughts. So, what do you think about permaculture?
I think that's great. That, like, the whole idea of having a cyclic type of growing, I think that's really smart, and that's the way to do it. And using the biodynamic farming principles, which has to do a lot with astrology and just the moon and things like that, I think that's a great way to approach it for sure. Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of that.
Yeah, that was actually, Sean might know a little bit about this. So that was actually started in Australia by a guy named Bill Mollison. Who I don't agree with everything he did, but I agree with the cyclical agricultural system where you don't tear down the land. You actually grow. It's a closed system where you use the animal, like you said, the animal waste to fertilize the crops. Mm-hmm. You have a closed growing system, which is sustainable. And I do agree with that. And I think it's a pretty interesting concept. I almost about 20 years ago, I almost went to a permaculture school in Colorado, and then I looked on the website and I saw who was there, and I decided I didn't want to go because they looked like a bunch of retards. But I will tell you, yeah. Hey, dude, like I was just reading the Communist Manifesto, and like I want to grow some carrots. Okay, man, yeah. Great for you.
Those places attract those types.
Yeah, we need right-wing permaculture. That would be great.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that a lot of these, quote, natural, healthy, holistic lifestyle things get pushed over to like more of a leftist type of perspective, because that's not necessarily true. I guess the whole hippie movement of the 60s kind of did that, where people just think that you're a hippie. Like, I've had people in my life think that I'm a hippie, which is kind of a joke, because I'm certainly not a hippie. I'm really not. I used to listen to some of that 60s music a little bit, but I'm certainly not a hippie. I just like, you know, a lot of natural stuff. I like gardening, animal husbandry, making my own food, you know, self-sufficiency, but I'm certainly not a hippie.
Well, I got to say, I do like, there's one Beatles song I like. It's called I Am the Walrus. It goes, I am the walrus. I am the Eggman. Cook, cook, a Jew. Cook, cook, a Jew.
I don't know that one.
Like yeah, John Lennon was great. He was prophetic on that one. Yeah, we're going to come out with a song. It's going to be called I Am the Walrus, and it's going to have cook, cook, a Jew. Cook, cook, a Jew. Yes. But anyway, Yeah, I do find that interesting that, that, you know, basically the left and the vegan left is basically propping up. And this is the whole thing, folks. You can't get trapped in the left-right paradigm. They are two wings of the same Jewish bird of prey, the right and the left. You have to be in the what I call the radical center. Real National Socialism was in the radical center. And we see this on both the right and the left, the propping up of big oy vey multinational corporations. Veganism truly is a way to prop up big agriculture, wheat, big corn, big soybean, because those are actually more profitable than meat and dairy. And so, you know, to come out with a diet that props up the most profitable crops for these big corporations is money in the bank for them and declining health for us. What do you say about that, Tabitha?
Yeah, I definitely agree, Mike. That is definitely true. And a lot of these products are, you know, they're packaged products, so they can take the, you know, the foodstuffs from the big ag, make it into a product. It could even be like, quote, an organic product, but still it's very processed. It's, you know, usually has low quality ingredients that they're touting as being good. It's oftentimes expensive and it's addictive. Like a lot of these foods are addictive. Like there was an article recently about how certain chips are just engineered to be addictive. Like that's the whole purpose of it. And I remember when I was in college, I was quite good at chemistry, and I was suggested by my teacher to possibly look into becoming like a a scientist for Kraft, because her husband was a food scientist or a flavor scientist for Kraft, and it was a well-paid job. But I was just like, ugh, like even 20 years ago, I'm like, there's no fucking way that I'm working for like one of these big companies, like churning out their garbage food. And I know that I would have been able to engineer a flavor that would have been super addictive, but I'm not that kind of person. Like, that's not my interest, but that's what they're doing. They're basically making food into a drug.
Well, that's what it is. It is a drug. And, you know, that reminds me, we're talking about chips. I remember back in the day, I remember friends of mine who were vegetarians who were addicted to these veggie straws, you know, these veggie straws. And if you read the ingredients, oh, it's nothing but soybean. It's nothing but soybean. It's complete garbage. And it's food coloring, red food coloring, green food coloring to make it look like vegetable, beet and broccoli coloring and that kind of thing. And they would... I said, what are you having for dinner? Veggie straws and some hummus. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I've actually had those before. They taste like plastic. They're horrible.
Yeah. That's what they are.
Yeah, but like, I mean, that's the thing. Oftentimes people also don't know how to prepare a lot of these foods. Like, and I've seen a lot of these videos on YouTube, and a lot of these, like, you know, quote, plant-based people, they're just like putting store-bought hummus on a piece of bread with like some tranny meat, and they're calling that dinner. Like, they can't cook. It's just like someone who buys the classic stuff at the regular food store. It's no different. It's just the non-meat version of that. It's a JWO diet, or whatever you want to call it. Like, that's the way I see it.
Or the other diet you told me about earlier.
That's right, the LPB diet. You want to tell everyone what that is?
That's the what Sean calls the little pussy bitch diet.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at some of the guys, I mean, that description is pretty appropriate. I mean, some of these men just look like, oh my God, like there are probably like men who are like those bear type homosexuals that are more masculine than these guys, you know?
Well, I got to say, you know, it's no joke that since veganism started taking off and testosterone levels went down, the advent of the skinny pants came out around the same time.
That is a keen and astute observation. Yeah, they did. Yeah. Wow. Those pants are
for all
awful.
The guys listening, if you have any testosterone running through your veins and you're a real man, you can't wear skinny pants. Ow, they hurt. Oh, God.
What the hell kind of a woman is going to be attracted to a man in those pants? I mean, I'd be really hard pressed to find someone attractive in a pair of pants like that. I mean,
you see these skinny guys walking around with fucking camel toes.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
Not that I'm looking or anything, Tabitha, but, you know.
Yeah, no, it's really not a good look at all.
You know, I was looking for pants because I had to get pants for a funeral. My mom actually passed away a couple weeks ago, and I was looking for pants. I didn't have any dress clothes because I very rarely dress up anymore, and I went to the store. And I went to like 5 stores trying to look for pants that I could wear. It's hard to find pants that aren't skinny pants. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, and I've seen that.
What do you do?
I don't know. I guess you go secondhand shopping or something. You hope to find something vintage. But I've noticed that even with like the suits that they make for men, like even like, you know, for weddings and stuff like that, like everything is very much a tapered leg.
I don't like it. I hate it.
I don't like it either.
It's ridiculous. But anyway, we're not going to get into clothing, although we could. But I have to say, you really are rustling some feathers over there at your old network. I have to say, your show's doing quite well. Their ratings are dropping like the asteroid that's fixing to hit the flat Earth pretty quick on the Alexa ratings over there. and I have to say, you're really rustling some feathers. And now, because of your show, you got competition taking place over there at I call it retrograde grade radio. Renegade broadcasting. So I know we have a break coming up in a minute, but after the break, I have something that I think you're going to find rather interesting. They're trying to copy you over there. They're trying to copy you. They're jealous of your knowledge. Whoa. And yeah.
Whoa. I have to see what this is then.
You know, getting back into Jews and veganism, David Wolf comes to mind.
Oh, God. Yeah, he's awful. Actually, I went to nutrition school like 2004, 2005, and he actually came. He was one of the guest healers or gurus, whatever you want to call them, that actually came to talk at my show. And I was really young. I was like 24 or 25, but he has such this skeezy vibe like about him. And he just like kept on talking about goji berries and maca and talking about how like maca made people horny and that they were like children born called maca babies. And it was just and cacao nibs. He was talking about like all these superfoods that would make you horny. And I think he was sitting backwards in like a chair like people do in high school. It was really creepy. Like he gave this really just skeezy vibe about him. Yeah. So that's my David Wolf experience.
Interesting that you actually got to see this guy live.
Yeah, I did.
He looks like a greasy Jew that's just trying to get laid off some young girls at his conferences is the vibe I get. He looks like somebody you see at Lollapalooza back in like 95.
Yeah, he does. And he was wearing one of those like Baja shirts that were popular in the 90s. Remember those things you'd see people wearing at like those like 90s type of concerts, that Mexican whatever type of shirt called a Baja, I think it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know that thing, that
yeah,
weird
that
kind of surfer thing?
Poncho.
Yeah, that like that. He was wearing
poncho.
That. He was wearing that at the school when he came to talk to my class. So, but yeah, he has this. You get the feeling he probably got into the whole holistic thing just to get laid.
Yeah, or sell supplements to make a lot
exactly.
of money.
Exactly, money and sex. Yeah. That's it.
I remember listening to him back in like early 90s, and he was talking the same stuff back then. It was goji berries, fucking cacao. He was big on this cacao thing. You remember this whole the real chocolate. This is Aztec chocolate. Oy vey, and it's kosher too. I mean, how the hell do you live on chocolate and goji berries?
You don't, actually. You get super sick and just basically, you know, get really have to deal with like the illness and all that type of stuff. But with him, I've heard that he was caught many times at a Japanese restaurant indulging in like tempura and like pork belly. So like all these fatty foods. And there he is on television, like preaching veganism and some crap about how chocolate lines up with the energy of the sun, like this bullshit line that he would say. And there he is eating tempura and pork belly. Like it's a business for these people. It's like when I was talking about the show on Tuesday, how these people who endorse veganism and these tranny burgers, they're all eating Wagyu steak at home. It's just crap.
Oh, absolutely. Like Arnold yeah. Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, this guy's not eating, No. I saw him on the cover of Cigar Aficionado magazine a couple days ago. This guy's not eating a vegan diet. This
no.
guy's...
they're endorsing it. It's just, yeah.
What are we having for dinner tonight? We're having squash. Oh, yeah, squash and broccoli. I'll be back. Put it in the oven. Put it in the oven. Hey, they don't put me in the oven. Put it in the oven. Anyway, these guys are making money, and this is the racket.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole racket. And this goes with the whole alternative media, with the whole called truth movement. I call it the Juth movement because, yeah, because look, this is what they did during the Bolshevik Revolution. They brainwashed the youth to be against everything that was natural, to go against natural law. Communism is Judaism put into political form. Mm-hmm. And it goes against natural law. It is the antithesis to natural law. And what we believe in is natural law. And these people want to turn the world upside down in an unnatural way. And it's amazing. And that's why I wanted to have you on, because this is so important to understand that your brain is shrinking if you're on this diet. You are becoming weak. You're losing testosterone if you're a man. If you're a woman, you might have problems with your reproduction on this diet. This is very serious stuff we're talking about, and it goes into, I played the Nolik Nadia tribute at the beginning of the show. Anyway, I hear the music. News, White Man, you, special guest, Tabitha. We'll be right back after the break.
I don't think I want to know a six-year-old who isn't a dreamer or a silly heart. And I sure don't want to know one who takes their student career seriously. I don't have a college degree. I don't even have a job. But I know a good kid when I see one. Because they're all good kids. Until dried-out, brain-dead skags like you drag them down and convince them they're no good. You so much as scowl at my niece or any other kid in this school, and I hear about it, I'm coming looking for you. Take this quarter. Go downtown and have a rat gnaw that thing off your face.
And I'm a really nice guy. Yeah. I used to be such a sweet, sweet thing to lay. Got a hold of me. I'd open doors for little old ladies. I'd help the blind to see. They can't be seen with me, and I'm feeling real shot down, and I'm feeling mean. No more Mr. Nice Guy. No more Mr. B.
Yeah.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. I've said I'm a C.
No more Mr. Nice Guy, and, there's no more Mr. Nice Guy on this broadcast tonight, and no more Mrs. Nice Woman. Special guest Tabitha from the White Wellness Show right here on this network, WTFR, where thought is free radio. And like I was telling you, Tabitha, before the break there, the other network used to be on, they're copying you. All of a sudden, Cyanide is real interested in doing her own wellness show. And I actually have a clip. We have secret agents, Nazi agents sent from a Black Pope time machine with stolen gold from Switzerland to infiltrate Jewish alt-right networks and alt-kike networks. And we were able to get this exclusive. Sean, if you have that exclusive of Cyanide's Vegan Kitchen, I think's the name of the show that's going to be coming out soon. It's absolutely unfucking believable. I couldn't believe it. Here is Cyanide's Vegan Kitchen. It's just
welcome
remarkable.
Everybody. Like whatever. Like I am Cyanide, and you are listening to Cyanide's Vegan Kitchen, 1488. By the way, if you don't know, I'm a vegan Nazi, vegan National Socialist, and me and my husband run a great radio network. It's called Rent to Grade Broadcasting. Yes. Well, Kyle should be home shortly, but I'm making him a delicious dinner. And tonight, I'm having broccoli. It's all about broccoli. Broccoli. We're having steamed broccoli. Boiled broccoli broth soup. We're also having like a couple shards of lettuce on the side for our appetizer, maybe with just a little bit of olive oil and sugar. You can never have enough sugar, you know what I'm saying? The Fuhrer loves sugar. He was a sugar freak, Zig Heil, 1488. So I'm going to prepare this great meal, and we're going to pair it. We're going to prepare the broccoli with like, and I'll give you my recipe at the end of the show for lettuce-wrapped swastikas. They're so cute, lettuce-wrapped swastikas. You can dip them like in water. That gives them a little more flavor. But make sure it's reverse osmosis water. You know, you don't want to get sick from the fluoride and all that, you know. So you can dip your lettuce swastika lettuce wraps in water, and maybe just a little bit of kosher salt. Oh, okay, 1488. Oh my God, we're gonna pair this great meal tonight with a big bottle of our own freaking piss. Yes, we're gonna drink all of this great broccoli with like our own piss. It is amazing. You are listening to Cyanide's Vegan Kitchen.
Oh my god, I think Kylie's home.
I'm home. Hey, Sinead? Is my testosterone
pills, have they arrived yet?
Oh, honey.
She bought some broccoli. She brought it home. She's chopping broccoli. Chopping broccoli. Chopping broccoli.
Yes, well, and I'm sorry, Shield Maiden in the chat for the puke sounds. That was actually me. I had to do research for this show. I had to go over to Renegade and listen to a broadcast, and that was actually me in the background throwing up after hearing their show over there. Sorry for the throw-up sounds. Anyway, Tabitha, you're a hot item. They're copying you over there.
Yeah, it sounds like quite a recipe, too, that meal.
And I know some people would be offended by the throw-up that I put in that. But actually, if you eat this diet, if you eat nothing but fucking chocolate and vitamins and and by the way, a lot of vegetables are toxic. To overindulge in vegetables is to put toxins into your body that will make you sick. A lot of, you know, a plant-based diet, a lot of plants will freaking kill you. If you eat nothing but certain types of vegetables, you can get very, very sick. By the way, on one of your last shows, you said that vegans have a higher rate of stroke and brain tumors than non-vegans.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And it's something that people don't really think about too often because we're always told that people go around saying that they want to eat less meat or something. People usually aren't walking around saying they're going to eat more. And now it seems like those diets where people are just eating meat have gotten really, really popular, which I'm not, you know, totally advocating. But I can understand for someone who's come off of something where they were eating a lot of foods that were giving them, you know, an overload of anti-nutrients, that something like a carnivorous diet would be a change to kind of pull all that out because there are no anti-nutrients in animal foods. And animal foods always get a terrible rap for what, saturated fat and, you know, all this stuff. And we need those things. Those things are good for our body. But it's also when you follow a diet like that, it gives your body a break from eating these foods that probably most of us have eaten every single day for all of our lives and never even thought about it because it's just what you do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the interesting things that you talk about on a lot of your shows that I find very interesting is the, well, actually, before we get into that, you had an article on the Ukrainian diet, which I found very interesting. Maybe you could kind of go into that here because I find it very interesting. While our infants over here in the West are sucking on plastic pacifiers that are probably full of toxins and horrible chemicals, they're doing something different in the Ukraine. Maybe you can go into that. I find it very interesting.
Yeah, I was reading this article in this magazine about the traditional diet in Ukraine. Not an area I really know too much about the food in general. I haven't really cooked too much of this food, but I like Eastern European food. Of what I cooked, I have liked it. So this article was going over different categories, you know, different meats, organs, seafood, bone broth and meat stocks, dairy, vegetables, fruits, and grains. And in this little article, it said right here that, I'll just read this paragraph. It says, the man in the business suit who ate a plate of lard all by himself ate it with three different seasonings. It is very popular to eat lard raw by adding it to a sandwich or just eating it as a small snack. It is also a component of soups and dumplings, and the Ukrainians add extra chunks of lard to their cured and fermented meats. Many parents have their babies suck on pieces of lard instead of a pacifier. So they're very much into lard. It's the national food of Ukraine, actually.
Well, I find that very interesting, Tabitha, because I am my father's side of the family was from Ukraine and Belarus. And yes. I my grandmother used to make all types of Ukrainian and White Russian dishes, and she used to make borscht with beef in there. She used to make pirozhki, which is actually like beef in like a roll. With a little bit of pork and a little bit of chicken combined, sometimes veal. Although I'm actually draw a line here. I'm opposed to veal. I don't like how in Georgia we have a lot of veal farms here. I do have a line that I won't cross. I think it's disgusting what they do to the veal. I won't eat veal anymore. I love veal, but it's a horrible process and it's torture, and I'm against that. You know, but yeah, I grew up in a lot of these dishes, and it was very a lot of fish, a lot of beets, a lot of potatoes, a lot of meat, especially pork, chicken, and beef. And none of the people, you know, that they used to live in a community, in a Ukrainian White Russian community in New York. And I didn't see any fat people there. There were no obese people. They were all in great shape and they lived long lives. Hell, my granddad lived to 94. And
wow.
My grandmother as well to, I think, 91. So, you know, and my granddad, he drank vodka and smoked every day on top of it.
Yeah. I've heard stories like people like that, old timers who just, you know, drank and smoked. But yeah, I think oftentimes, like, not to say those things are awesome habits that we should strive for, but I think oftentimes these things are played up as being worse than they actually are. And then things like microwaving, for example, is like, oh, it was only 30 seconds. You know, like, I think that microwaving is way less healthy than having vodka. I mean, certainly it's more natural to drink vodka than to microwave.
Well, I usually, if I do have to microwave anything, I usually make sure I have at least four shots of vodka before putting it in the microwave, because I'm convinced that maybe the vodka will get rid of the radiation.
Maybe it's protective, and maybe the nicotine of the tobacco is as well. I mean, it's who knows, you know, you never know.
Folks, for those of you listening to this broadcast, you know that Mike Sledge is not the beacon of health. You know what's funny? I actually, Tabitha, go to the gym about three times a week. I have a gym membership. I hit the gym three times a week, every week. I actually work out. I do cardio. I lift weights. And the people at the gym laugh at me because I'll do like a bunch of reps, and I'll hit the treadmill. Then I'll go outside, and there's actually a coffee shop next door to the gym I go to. So I'll go outside. I'll smoke a cigarette. Then go get an espresso, go back in the gym, lift some more weights. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel pretty good. You know what? I lost 35 pounds in the last 2 years just getting rid of a lot of bullshit carbs and shit like that. You know, I don't do a lot of wheat anymore. For breakfast, I'll do like, I like my eggs sunny side up. I usually wake up in the morning, do a shot of vodka, have a cup of coffee, put some Baileys in it, then do another shot of vodka, then have four eggs sunny side up, maybe a piece of bacon, Then I might, if I don't have to work, I might hit the gym, smoke about another pack of cigarettes. No, I'm just kidding. I don't smoke that much. But I swear I look more healthy than these vegans. I swear to God, Tabitha.
Well, like I said on the show on Tuesday, that with the Fruvigorous diet, the frugivore diet, which is like the extreme of the extremes, like usually people will go from like, let's say more of like a just a vegan diet to maybe like a whole foods plant-based one, like in the raw, and then they'll finally taper down if they get that into it. Not everyone does this. They'll go to like a Fruvigorous diet. And I've seen people who, you know, did a lot of drugs and loved to drink and loved to smoke and ate a lot of fast food. And these people looked like more nourished, like more, I guess, intact than these Fruvigorous people. It is scary the way these people look who basically just subsist on fruit. There's actually a couple of people, I think, on YouTube who have actually had like Fruvigorous pregnancies, which is just shocking.
What?
Yeah.
What does that entail?
That means they keep a diet of only raw fruit. So that would include like avocado, because avocado is botanically a fruit. They could have tomato. Some of them don't do any salt or oil either. So all their fats would have to come from like, let's say, coconut, avocado, some nuts or botanically fruits like almonds and cashews. So they could do that as well. But a lot of them stop doing nuts too, because they think nuts cause mucus. So some, or avocados cause mucus, or coconuts. So some of them are just like eating like a shit ton of like avocados, not avocados, oranges, apples, bananas, like all these really, really sugary kind of low fat fruits. And they say that they're feeling very spiritual on the diet, but I just think they're like, their blood sugar is just like through the roof crazy. And that's what they're like thinking is like a spiritual feeling. It's like, it's basically an eating disorder. It's an eating disorder and, and a drug addiction, essentially. But it's healthy. It's spiritual.
Let me tell you something. I thought I found God on LSD a couple times.
I was, yeah, we all have,
I'm
right?
Wrong.
Yeah.
But what you're describing, is true. They're going into a sugar overload, and they're approaching death or passing out from lack of protein and lack of animal fats. And of course they feel like they're finding their spiritual awakening because they're on the verge of fucking death.
Yeah, it's almost like a spiritual experience you'd have before you cross over, you know what I mean? And like they're basically starving themselves, and they have so many horrible problems. Like you can see how emaciated they look. They look super old too from all the sugar, whether it's fructose or not, doesn't matter. A lot of them have horrid issues with their teeth. Cavities, teeth falling out, teeth rotting out when they bite into something soft. It's absolutely just, it's horrifying.
Yeah, the fruitarian is, and this gets me into this. Most cults, I remember you sent me offline a documentary, which I watched, called The Wild Wild West, about this interesting Yoshi, right?
Oh, Osho. Rajneesh. Osho. Yeah. Yeah.
Osho. Yeah. Osho.
Yeah.
It was in Oregon, by the way. A hotbed for weirdos from all stripes.
Oh, yeah.
In Oregon. It is a bizarre fucking place. I've been out there. I had a friend that lived out there for a long time, and it's just, he's still a friend of mine, but yeah, he's probably listening. If you're listening, you're still fucking crazy, my friend, but I love you. But he lived in Oregon for a while. But yeah, these cults, all of these cults, require a vegan diet, or at least a vegetarian diet, high in sugar, low in protein, because this makes them easier to brainwash, to be brought into the cult, because it shrinks the brain. They have no critical thinking skills. And this is why this is done in all, at all these cults. This is why this is a requirement. This is why it lowers the testosterone. It makes them easily adaptable and able be, and they're easily able to be molded into the cult philosophies. And I believe a lot of these cults, like the one you showed there, there was more going on there than in that documentary. I believe a lot of these cults, going back to like Jim Jones, who also experimented with vegetarianism in the Guyana when he set up his cult there, the Jim Jones whole thing in the late 70s. I believe, you know, and that was proven to be a CIA-fronted operation. And I think what we saw in the past in the 60s, 70s, and 80s were the CIA-run cults to see what the reaction would be from the people in the cult, and then they could then take that, you know, on a wider scale and spread it through the whole country. So what we're seeing with veganism, go ahead, Tabitha, tell me your thoughts on this.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that was like a little incubator, like kind of like a little petri dish for it to see like how it took off in like a microcosmic perspective. And then now it's being implemented in more of a widespread way. And I have to say the 60s in general was kind of a bit of an incubator for these diets, because that's when you saw a lot of the cookbooks come out that featured mostly vegetarian, some vegan at that point, but it wasn't wholly that way. But I've been a cookbook collector for decades, and I have really, really old cookbooks going all the way back to like, I guess, well, the 30s up until now. And the 60s is when that type of food really got popular with the whole hippie movement. In the 50s, it was very different. People ate very differently. But in the 60s is where you kind of saw a lot of that, like people eating sprouts and not eating meat and all that. That was very much the 60s was an incubator. And there were a lot of cults in the 60s. And the Osho one came later. That came like in the 80s and 90s. So there were plenty of cults back in the 60s. And that's where I think the incubation happened for that diet. And you could see it with the cookbooks, and you can see it with the evolution of how cookbooks have become up until current day.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that, you know, we know this for a fact, that Timothy Leary, who was a promoter of vegetarianism along with LSD, in the 60s, admitted on several interviews that he was hired by the CIA to spread LSD and alternative lifestyles through that whole decade of the 60s. So we know this for a fact. And now, you know, I think you're right. That was the incubator. That was the testing ground. And now it's just widespread. I mean, I have to deal with even people in my family who are older are like, well, maybe I should go on a plant-based diet now that I'm getting older. I'm like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Continue what you're doing. You're healthy. You're like 78. You're doing good. Don't switch it up. It'll kill you. Don't do it. But this is reach now. Critical mass, folks. It really has, Tabitha. It really has reached.
It has. And that's the point. Like, they also want to associate it with being virtuous or doing good, which they kind of did in the 60s and 70s. There was a book that came out called Diet for a Small Planet, I think the late 70s. And this was a really big book for this kind of whole movement. It was written by a woman called Frances Moore Lappe. This came out in 1971. It was a best-selling book. And this book was one of the first major books that noted the environmental impact of meat production. So this was one of the first books that kind of started the, quote, vegetarian movement. And this is a classic in this field. So they were using this as an incubator for a while, basically saying that we should be eating 70% whole grain, 30% legume. Like, that's kind of like the diet that they were pushing. That's kind of very similar to the diet that I was raised on. I was raised on the macrobiotic diet, which is pretty much granivorous. It was a grain-based diet, and it was supposed to be a diet of world peace. I was not raised vegan, thankfully. Some macrobiotic people were. We ate fish, we ate eggs, and we occasionally ate dairy, like on special occasions. But this diet was supposed to be the diet that was going to save the planet and be the diet for world peace. There's even a book called World Peace Diet written by somebody else. There's a lot of books like this where they're associating it with world peace and planetary salvation.
So basically it was like a piscatarian diet. Isn't that what it's called?
Yeah, my diet was pretty much pescatarian, but most pescatarian diets would probably feature a bit more dairy than mine did. Like, we didn't eat dairy, and we didn't eat land animals. We ate fish and eggs. That was pretty much like our animal foods. And honey, not so much. We may basically use brown rice syrup and maple sugar, because honey was thought to be too expansive or too yin, so we didn't eat that.
Interesting. Very interesting. You lived an interesting lifetime, I gotta say.
Oh, thank you.
It's very interesting. You know, getting back to this whole diet here, you know, what I find amazing, though, is the fact that you're talking about world peace. You're talking about, this was the beginning of actually, you know, feminism was actually created for the purpose by the Rockefeller Foundation of having both partners, the man and the woman, both paying taxes because the tax base was shrinking by the time the early 70s came, and they needed the feminist movement to have both people in the family, the mother and the husband, paying taxes, income tax, to bring more revenue into the federal government, to expand the government welfare programs and welfare state. And this was the whole purpose of the feminist movement, to get it, not only to destroy the nuclear family, but to get the woman into paying income tax. So you had two income taxpayers per household, which meant a shitload of money coming into the federal government so they could expand the military war machine, to expand their wars, Vietnam, then later going into all that we see with the war on terror. They never could have done this without the expansion of the revenue base through both people working. And I see the same thing with the vegetarian movement, in that big agriculture was becoming bigger and bigger in the late 50s, going into the 60s and 70s. And, you know, the corn farmers in the heartland, the wheat farmers, became a huge lobby, and they needed the ability to expand, to bring in more revenue. So the vegetarian diet, remember, there is more agricultural land for wheat, soybeans, and corn than there is for meat, for cows, for pastures. This is mm-hmm. a fact. So you see the same type of thing they did with the feminist movement, with the vegetarian movement, to bring in more money to big agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely. And also lying about how other parts of the world eat too. Like, it is true that a lot of third world countries will eat like kind of more of a diet that's like this. Like, let's say in India, for example, where South India, where they're mostly a Dravidian population, not in the north where they're mixed, you know, with white blood and stuff like that. But the very, very dark mm-hmm. Indians, the Dravidian ones who eat the Southern Indian diet, they're very small people and they eat pretty much just like rice and a little bit of lentil and vegetables. And they do eat dairy. They're not totally, you know, vegan, because they do eat dairy products, you know, yogurts and stuff like that. But these are the people who drink their own piss. Like, there was at one point a piss soda that was going to be introduced. Coca-Cola supposedly was going to introduce a piss soda in India because these people drink their piss because they're so deficient in nutrients. But these people grow really, really small, these Southern Indian Dravidian people. And they also, this may be a bit of a risque thing to say, but they have the smallest penis of any racial group.
Well, that makes sense. The skinny
Doesn't
pants.
It? Yeah,
maybe the skinny pants came out of fucking, thank you, it'll come again. We got the skinny pants and a big gulp. We got lentil, rice, skinny pants, big gulp. We have the new holiday scratch-offs. You come in by big gulp. We have skinny pants in the back aisle next to the nigger hair weave. Nigger hair weaves hanging in the window, skinny jeans. We have no balls. No balls at all. All we have is big gulp scratch-offs. Thank you. Come again. All right, I hear the music. News, white people can use, special guest, Tabitha from White Wellness, right here in WTFR. See on their side.
Absolute morality, the absolute morality that a religious person might profess would include what? Stoning people for adultery, death for apostasy, punishment for breaking the Sabbath. These are all things which are religiously based absolute moralities. I don't think I want an absolute morality. I think I want a morality that is thought out, reasoned, argued, discussed, and...
Yeah. if I'm too rough, tell me, I'm so scared, your little head will come off in my hands.
WTFR.
News white people can use right here on WTFR, where thought is free radio, and my special guest tonight is Tabitha from the White Wellness Show right here on this very network. Check her show out. It is amazing. It's an honor to have her on. And by the way, just want to let everybody know how close this show was not going to be able to happen tonight, because Sean almost got bit by a snake. No joke. And, I don't know what kind of snake it was. It was a brown snake. I know here in Georgia, we have a lot of diamondback rattlesnakes. The moccasins are the worst here in Georgia. These fuckers, I was fishing one time, and I was bass fishing because I'm a redneck, and I was bass fishing in my friend's bass boat, and we were underneath a tree fishing, and this bastard fell from the tree branch into the boat. This thing was thick as hell. Nasty little fucker. And, of course, we threw it out. My friend had his gun on him, but you didn't want to shoot the bottom of the boat, but we got the oar. We had an oar in the boat, threw it out. But I was fishing one other time on the side of the riverbank, and a water moccasin chased me. It must have been, 10, 20 feet. This little nasty, nasty little bastards, big bastards. 'Cause some of these snakes get like 5-6 feet long, thick as hell. The water moccasins are the worst. Yeah. Sean, I'm glad you survived. It was a Jewish snake trying to kill you. You know what? The snakes of the Mossad.
Hey, how can we get rid of WTFR? Gavalt. Here's what we'll do. We'll send in snake super soldiers. We'll throw them on the property from a Mossad helicopters, and we'll make sure that Mr. Surplus can't... can't broadcast. He's killing us over here in Israel.
Anyway, glad you're alive, Sean. Be careful when you walk out there. Let me tell you, I look out every time I go in the backyard. I look out. There's all kinds of fucking critters out there. We have bears, too. Black bears. But anyway, Tabitha, getting back to the topic, we were talking about, a lot of these cults. And we'll get into organ meats in a minute, and there's other stuff I know you want to cover, but I find this very interesting because, let's just face the facts here, most cults, and I would classify the United States government as a cult at this point. They are a Bolshevik, communist, cultural Marxist cult that is brainwashing this country on a daily basis, committing white genocide, same thing in Europe, and vegetarianism, veganism, is necessary to dumb down the masses, shrink the brain, to make you accepting cultural Marxism. You have no critical thinking skills. So I want to get back into this. The Osho documentary you sent me, I found was very interesting. These people took over a whole town and almost took over a whole state.
Yeah, they did. And they had these armed people outside their headquarters all the time. They basically took over the town restaurant, which was like a diner, and started it being like a restaurant that served the food that the cult ate. And their diet was pretty awful, too. They were eating just the worst food. Like, they actually put a cookbook out at one point. I think it was called Zorba the Greek for some reason. I don't know why it was called
Zorba
that.
Zorba
the
Greek? Are you kidding
Yeah,
me?
Which is really random. I forget why. Osho had a connection to that or something he liked about that. Maybe I could find it right now. But I think I downloaded it at some point. Yeah, and the recipes looked really just kind of gross. Was the restaurant called Zorba the Greek? Maybe it was.
You know, this was a really interesting place. For those of you listening that don't know what we're talking about, this cult almost took over the whole state of Oregon, basically. I mean, this was how powerful they became with this Osho guy. And they actually had sex orgies all the time. They took over a whole town. They had like a discotheque where they had like sex orgies all the time. How they had the sex orgies on the vegan diet, I don't know. I imagine cocaine was involved.
They were putting some type of antipsychotic in the people's beverage or something like that. And there were also a lot of homeless people who had come to this compound. A lot of just crazy homeless people. Oh, it's called Zorba the Buddha. It was a cookbook. Zorba the Buddha Rajneesh cookbook. You could buy it for $65 online. He also went by the name Rajneesh before he went by the name Osho. But yeah, it's a cookbook. It's an Osho cookbook. It could be yours now, for $70.
Yes, yeah, $70. I'm sure that's still going to the foundation, which still exists, by the way, in India.
Yeah, they pretty much took the business there, like after they got booted and I guess exiled, or you know, they had to go back to India.
Now, what I find interesting about this, not only did they and this is very important for you listening to understand, because this is like Tabitha said, an incubator, like the 60s were, to practice, to see, you know, like Haight-Ashbury was like a testing ground, a CIA beta test, to see how this would work on a small area, and Laurel Canyon as well. Dave McGowan's work is amazing. But this Osho was the same thing in Oregon, and I believe it was backed by more powerful forces than just his foundation, by the way. I truly believe that, just like Jim Jones was. But the reason this is important is because they brought in the vegetarianism, they brought in this bullshit New Age spirituality, and then they brought in the multiculturalism. Very important. And they started busing in homeless, mainly black homeless people into this village.
Yeah, they did. And these people didn't want to leave either, because I think it was kind of, in a sad way, the only family that they really ever had. So they were very resistant to leave, but they were also being drugged as well. They were giving them 2 beers a day and putting, what is it? Something with an H, some drug that began with the name H, Halbasol.
Yeah, it was
something
like Halcyon
like
or something.
Yeah, they were putting this into the people's beer. And then they were having them do this dynamic meditation technique where you move yourself in a crazy way and you get your breathing going really rapid. And then you do that for like 15 minutes. And then you start screaming. Then you stop and you go catatonic. Like, they were doing all this really weird type of energy work with the body. And then, you know, having these sex orgies, and children were being raised there too in the mess of all this. They had like an Osho school for the youngsters that were like, you know, born here, whose parents were like, you know, devotees of him. Crazy.
Yeah. And I'm sure I'm not going to make any accusations because, you know, we here at News White People Can Use follow law. I am legal savvy, but I have to say, I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't some kinky pedo shit going on at this place as well. I would not be surprised.
Same. I wouldn't either. No, they might even say it was the guise of something being a spiritual experience or something like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But what's funny is they brought in these groids from all over the country, and they bust them in. They actually bought Greyhound buses, bust these people in. And most of them were groids from the streets. They loved it there. They loved
it. Yeah,
they
did.
They were like, where the white women's at? I got a disco, shit. Osho, my nigga. I'm meditating. I'm raising my kundalini, G. Yo, you know what I'm saying? I get 2 beers a day, but goddamn. Oh, well, you know, he's changed it now. I get 2 Thunderbirds a day. You know, I two Colt 45s a day. Goddamn, these Colt 45s sound like a little strong for my taste, G. Osho, my nigga. He loved it. They loved it there. But here's what happened in that documentary. The groid started chimping out, all fucked up on the sipping on some scissorp. And the Osho scissorp they were sipping on, they started flipping out and getting violent in the community. And these people had to get rid of the groids. They kicked him out.
I think they even had probably yeah, they did. And I think the reason they probably originally brought them there was just to use them as say, oh, look how big our following is. Like, they were just using these people, you know, to see how big, yeah, like of a compound they could basically get and then make themselves look more powerful.
Well, they were doing what the Democratic Party does today. They were bussing in votes, because you remember, they were trying to take over the city council. They didn't have enough votes, so they bust in groid homeless people, doped them up, and made them vote for them.
Pretty much.
That's why they did it.
Yeah, pretty so much. Basically,
and then they poisoned. Didn't they put poison in some of the restaurants, like in Portland or something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, they did something nasty where they poisoned the salad bar of a restaurant that, like, you know, the regular people in the town were going to. And there was, like, I think an outbreak. Was it salmonella or something like that? And a lot of people became yeah. very ill from this. And yeah, so they were, you know, poisoning the well or poisoning the salad bar.
Now, what's interesting about, and by the way, for those listening, this is called The Wild Wild West, the Osho documentary. And it's on Netflix. I would highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. It's great to watch, just as I would highly recommend the Jim Jones stuff. I might do a whole nother show on Jim Jones, because he was totally CIA controlled. It was another incubator, another beta test. Vegetarianism involved as well in that test. Similar thing. They all ended up killing themselves. But, well, they did us all a favor, and they killed themselves. So thank God for that. But Osho, he had these two Jews from Hollywood that eventually became his medical advisors, right?
I think so. He had this other woman called Hazya or Hazda or something like that, who was also very close to him, who was like a Hollywood person or had Hollywood connections.
Yeah. So you see here again, the whole Hollyweird connection with this cult makes total sense. And we see now today with Scientology, right? A similar situation. I don't know if Scientology uses vegetarianism. I'm not sure about that, but I don't think they do. But
I don't know if they do, but a lot of cults and religions have a prescribed diet. All the Abrahamic ones do. Buddhism does. A lot of Rastafariism does. A lot of religions have a prescribed diet.
Now, you mentioned Buddhism. You know, I've studied Buddhism and religions for years. I actually have a divinity degree in theology, which at one point in my life, believe it or not, I thought I was going to go into ministry. God, that would have been a total disaster. But I digress, folks. But I've studied pretty much all the religions. Original Buddhism. And it's not a religion, by the way. Buddhism is not a religion. It's philosophy, because Buddha really wasn't meant to be a religion. It was a philosophy, a life philosophy. But the original Buddha was not vegetarian-based. It was not. This came later on down the road, which I find very interesting.
Yeah, the same thing is true basically in the original Ayurvedic diet. And, of course, the Buddha was considered, like, you know, a Hindu, or I'm assuming a Vedicist, because supposedly he was an Aryan, blonde hair, blue eyes, from some mm-hmm. you know, speculations that original Ayurvedic diet was not a vegetarian diet. It was a meat-based diet, and at some point it got garbled down into this vegetarian diet, which is like what the people in the south of India eat, which is not really the true Ayurvedic diet.
Yes, absolutely. And let's not forget, folks, if you want to read a good book, read The Indo-Europeans. It's a very good book. I highly recommend it. this, just like everything was corrupted in the West with our pagan philosophies, I hate using that word pagan, but our pre-Christendom philosophies we had from our ancestors were actually hijacked, taken over, and corrupted. The same thing happened with Buddhism and the Vedic texts. They were completely corrupted down the road. They did not start out. Jewish banker in the chat said, they have monks. They're not a religion. Well, originally they did not have monks. That came later on down the road after it was infiltrated and corrupted. All this stuff has been infiltrated and corrupted. But the original Buddhism and the original Vedic text did not have a vegetarian diet. This came later, Tabitha. This is very important to understand.
Yeah, it's very important to understand, especially a lot of these yogic people or these people who are into the whole New Age thing who are, you know, following the Ayurvedic diet. It's not the diet that they push forth nowadays. And a lot of people don't know that. And they don't know that the origins of yoga. So they're just kind of attracted to something, possibly on a subconscious level, but not really knowing the true story behind it. And then they get caught up in some of the beliefs and they're like, oh, I want to eat this diet because I believe in the belief system. And they're actually kind of not going about it the right way. So they're really misled, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Another book I thought that I read, this was a Oy Vey Kike book that came out back in the early 2000s. I don't know if you're familiar with this. It was written by a Jew, but it was promoted to the Christians, especially here in the South, the evangelical crazy Christians who believe they're going to be raptured up, Kirk Cameron. They don't want to be left behind. But anyway, I love Israel. Oh, my God. Jesus is my co-driver. If this car is unmanned, it's because I've been raptured. Get the fuck. Anyway, this book came out. It was written by a kike. It was called The Maker's Diet.
Oh, yes. I know this book. I used to have it, I think.
Okay, yeah. Good. Yeah. I thought you'd find this one interesting, too. This basically promotes the kosher diet to Christians, which basically Christianity is an extension of Judaism, so go figure. But this was a really hard push around 2005 to like 2010 to push the not only the Israeli agenda, the Jew agenda, but the Jewish diet on Gentiles.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also makes me think that, you know, that guy who's like a preacher, Joel Osteen, I think he's like an evangelical, guy.
Guy with good teeth, right?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, he's like sells out like these mega churches. Yeah, he's weird. Very weird. Like a thinner Tony Robbins, right?
Tony Robbins bitch, you know?
Kind of, yeah. Well, that guy promotes like a certain brand of Christianity where he follows this maker's style diet. He doesn't eat pork. He doesn't eat shellfish. He doesn't eat any of those, quote, unclean foods. So certain Christians do follow this kind of like more kosher diet.
Yeah. And really, this really was because we had the war on terror going on at this time.
Yeah.
We had the Greater Israeli Project, the expansion of the wars in the Middle East for Jewish power grab, for land grabs. And at the same time, we had this diet being pushed, the kosherizing of white people through this diet, which I find very important. Your feelings on pork and shellfish?
Pork, I have kind of mixed feelings on because I don't know. I think it's like kind of close to human, I would say. Like, I remember one time watching a show where I saw like a pig that was gutted and like on like a, I guess, in a thing that we're going to do for like a luau or like a roast or something. And it just looked like a human. I don't know. And I've always heard that pork is a food that kind of holds a lot of parasites. So I really don't eat it myself. I think if someone was living like, let's say, in Sardinia and they were eating like wild boar or really good quality pork, maybe that would be slightly different. And I do know that the Okinawans, who were the longest lived population in the world, eat a pretty good amount of pork, more than I actually originally believe that they eat. Just like all the blue zone areas where they have longevity, they eat quite a fair amount of meat. And that's another hoax. They're saying that their diet is 85 plant, 15 meat. And I believed that for a while, but now I've seen the light and that's not true. So for me, pork is a hard sell because it's not very relatable or familiar to me based on my background. And I guess I have a lot of biased against it. But I think if someone was eating, you know, Okinawan pork or Sardinian pork, if it was wild boar, it would be different. Most of the pork here in this country is pretty low quality. So I don't eat it myself. But with shellfish, I do eat shellfish. I just make sure I get wild shellfish and get it from a good place, because if you're not getting it from a good place, like I got something recently that I ended up just tossing in the garbage because it just reeked of chlorine. It was really just low quality stuff.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so that's my feelings.
I'm glad you brought that up because now here where I live in the South, in Georgia, Alabama, Texas, Mississippi, we have a feral pig problem. They are everywhere. They are destroying property. They are threatening people. These are very dangerous animals. They will gut you. They will attack you. They are very violent. I've had wild pig. It is pretty good. It is different from the pork that you get in the stores. But we have to kill these creatures here because they are out of control. And let me remind, but I agree with you on the pork, by the way. I really don't care for pork as much as, you know, I eat it every now and then. I mean, I do eat it, but I agree with you. I absolutely agree with what you're saying. And let me remind the people that the pig is not indigenous to the United States. It's not an indigenous creature. It was brought over here, I believe, by the Spanish.
Yeah, I'm not sure who brought them over, but yeah, the indigenous food is more of the ruminants, like cattle, bison, elk, moose, you know, venison, or, you know, deer, things like that. Like even chicken is a relatively new food. Like 100 years ago, even 50, people didn't eat nearly as much chicken as they do now. And most people say they eat meat, and they do stats that say the average person eats X amount of meat per year, and they factor in all the meats. It's mostly chicken for most people. Because chicken is cheap, it's easy to season, it's available everywhere, and people have been told that it's a lot healthier than beef.
Well, I got to tell you, I prefer the beef. I worked, Tabitha, I haven't told you this, I worked at a chicken plant for 3 years back when I was young.
Okay, interesting.
And I worked at a chicken plant, actually in further processing. This was back when I was like 21, 22, 23 years old. And, I mean, I could not eat chicken when I worked there. I did not eat chicken, but we had the contract for KFC. We had the contract for McDonald's. We had the contract. We had the contract for Chick-fil-A. I can honestly say the Chick-fil-A chicken was the breast meat. It was not any fillers. It was actually a better product that Chick-fil-A put out, the white nationalist chicken that I love so much, but the rest of it. The KFC, you couldn't pay me to eat that shit. You couldn't pay me. I mean, it was basically, oh, and the chicken nuggets are like injected with like silicone to plump them up. And they're basically the skin and of the chicken just wrapped around and plumped up with some kind of edible silicone and MSG breading and then deep fried and then flash frozen. It's actually disgusting. But the funniest part about the chicken plant when I used to work there was, to make sure the chickens were kosher, and this is no lie, people, listen to this, this is no lie. They had a audio, like a CD or something, in the kill room. You had a bunch of Mexicans in the kill room, like, hey, homie, I'm in the kill room, man. I'm illegal, but I come here to come from Mexico homes, and I'm going to kill these chickens because if they don't kill them properly, I got to cut them with this razor blade, homes. You know what I'm saying? So they had the Mexicans in the kill room. They used to play an audio tape or CD of some rabbi blessing the chickens as they were killed.
That's insane.
It was like, hey, the chicken, the Colonel Sanders is kosher. We give you the blessings from Israel. You know. It's absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe it. But here's what they did, Tabitha, to let you know, the listeners know. The chickens were so steroided out. It was like 8 weeks. I had a friend of mine that used to work in the hatching room across the street from the plant I worked at. And he said it was 8 weeks from hatch till slaughter. Their feet never touched the ground. Mm-hmm. They were pumped up with steroids. These fucking chickens looked like turkeys by the time they were brought into the slaughter. And they were hung, dipped in like hot oil, feathers came off, then they were electrocuted, knocked out, and this machine would slit their throat. But sometimes the machine would miss slitting the throat, and that's where the Mexican with the razor blade came in.
Wow.
So anyway.
Yeah, no, I know. I've heard actually some of them mature in 6 weeks, what they call a broiler. Those mature in like 6 weeks from like hatch to slaughter.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And it literally changed my life, Tabitha. It changed my life working there because I was like, what the fuck? This is back in like, I guess, what, 1999, 2000, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's crazy. It's so like not that whole factory farm model is like it's only in the last, you know, recent 100 years or so. Like it's not really real. You know, it's not really the way we're really supposed to do stuff. And the whole idea of eating all this chicken, like it's really not the healthiest thing. Like beef has way more vitamins and minerals and nutrients and things like that than chicken does. Chicken really doesn't have that much going on for it. It's just available.
Absolutely. I would say it's the weaker of the meats.
Yeah, it is.
Now, cows. Friend of mine used to have cows. He used to raise cows. When I was in high school, I used to help him. We had to castrate these fuckers. And I mean, this is what you have to do on a farm, folks. You know, I was raised in the South. This is what I dealt with, you know. But these cows, let me tell you something, folks. If you're sorry for the cows, you're an idiot. Because these are the dumbest creatures I've ever met in my life. These fucking cows were so stupid. I mean, it's like they were created for us to eat.
I mean, it very well could be. Yeah. I mean, it's the cycle, right?
Yeah. I mean, but these, you know, I used to hear people, oh, the cows, it's so sad what they do. And if you know how they're killed, you have the cattle prod shot that basically is like, for those that have seen No Country for Old Men, this is what they use to kill the cows, but it kills them instantly, basically. Or you can just shoot them in the head. They, you know, at a humane grass-fed cow farm, they are humanely treated. They live a great life. And they are a very important part of our diet. And, I love beef. I love brisket. I love a good steak. I had a good steak yesterday. Tabitha, what do you say about the cow? I mean, it's important for Arian, right?
Yeah, I think it's an important thing to have in your diet. And for me, it's unusual evolution because I didn't grow up eating this type of stuff. So I had my first bite of very overcooked steak at 24. And I thought all meat was just, I was like, oh, that was horrible. Because it was like well done. Whoever got their steak well done. I was at a business dinner and one person got a well done steak and they all wanted me to try a little piece. And I was like, this is horrible. And then years later, when I got more into grilling and through some people in my life, I was understanding it more and saying, oh, this actually could be enjoyable. But it took me a while to kind of integrate into my life. And I still haven't had a lot of different cuts. So it's still rather new to me. I've mostly stuck to having the steaks personally because that's kind of my favorite. But I definitely think it has a good amount of nutrients and things that people could benefit from. And if they didn't, let's say, like beef for whatever reason, there's bison or elk, venison, other things, you know, that offer similar profiles.
Yes, and I have the venison already stocked up for this year. I have my friends that go hunting. I used to go hunting a lot, but I don't have time anymore. I have plenty of deer meat now in the deep freeze, ready to go. I use it for everything. I love venison. It is my favorite of all meats. It is the most healthy meat, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's a very lean meat, very little fat. Of course, deer are vegetarian, so it makes it a great meat. I love it. I love deer meat. God, the backstrap. But anyway, don't get me started on that.
It's wild. Anything wild is best, you know? That's what makes it the best. Just like the elk, you know? Elk's kind of like in the same vein. It's wild meat.
Yeah, I mean, and I hear people in these, you know, if I ever travel into Atlanta, I hardly do because it's such a faggot city at this point that I don't like going there. So I saw that you posted a... a clip of some pride school in Atlanta. Doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah. Atlanta is like the new San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
I hear the music. We will be back on the other side. Tabitha from White Wilderness joins me. News white people can use. Mike Sledge on their side.
Obscenity invades every area of our lives, however much we do to try and repel it. Fear of the obscene is expressed in networks of vigilance, such as campaigns for public morality. Legislation about obscenity persists, and calls for its extension are frequent. But the fascination of the forbidden is irresistible, and obscenity can seem the nucleus of English eloquence. The English were once labelled les gardames by the French. Since the 1960s, they have been les fuck-offs. And among the many mentions of English-speaking culture is that snarling expletive, a two-word anthem for the Anglosphere. The Language Wars by Henry Hitchings.
Yeah. Welcome back. News white people can use. This is Mike Sledge on the one and only WTFR, where thought is free radio. My special guest tonight, Tabitha from the White Wilderness Show right here on this platform. A great, great broadcast. And it was an honor to have her on this broadcast tonight. Tabitha, let's get into... by the way, I see Shield Maiden in the chat. Yes, I will send y'all some, y'all, this is how we say it, y'all. I will send y'all some deer jerky, no problem. I know a guy that makes some real great deer jerky. I will send y'all some before the season is over, I promise. And you will love it, by the way. It's absolutely amazing. By the way, alligator jerky is good as well. Alligator jerky, unbelievable.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. Sean lives in Australia there with all the crocodiles. I wonder if they have crocodile jerky down there. The tails, by the way, the best part of the alligator to eat is the jowls, like the jaws of the alligator. Mm. You can cut that out. And now in Georgia, you can kill the alligator. I think it's 2 months out of the year now. I think you can kill up to like 8 alligators because we've got so many of them now. You can grill them out. Put the jowls on the grill. Or in a smoker. Put them in the Big Green Egg smoker, which I love. It's my favorite smoker. By the way, Big Green Egg is going to write Sean now and say, get this Nazi. I don't want him supporting our product. Anyway, that's okay. Tabitha, great to have you on.
Thank you.
Where do you want to go now? You want to do the organ meat thing? How important that is?
Yeah, we can talk about that. I can further elaborate on another aspect of that that Ukrainian article about their relationship to organ meat, just to show how one European culture eats organs. Okay, I'm going to read this little piece. If you put fried brains in front of the average American, they might faint, or as the average Ukrainian would eat it before the American hit the floor. Organ meats are consumed regularly in Ukraine, with the average Ukrainian eating organ meats 1 to 3 times a week by my estimate. When you go to the grocery store, you will find liver, kidneys, and heart, and the daily farmers will have any organ meat you could ask for. In addition, at the farmers markets, you can find stomach or sausages stuffed with organ meats. Blood sausages are also very popular, along with blood pudding. There are many different brands of liver pâté available, typically featured on restaurant menus, along with breaded fried brains. A lot of restaurants also serve liver dumplings. Ukrainians consume liver cake and can purchase it in the grocery store or in restaurants. Ukrainians do not make liver cake to mask the taste of liver. Far from it. Ukrainians actually enjoy the textures and tastes of the organ meats. Liver cake looks like a stack of pancakes and gets served as an appetizer at celebrations and weddings. So that's just a little bit about how they do it. And I've never had brain before. That kind of, I don't know. I've heard pros and cons about if that's actually something we should be eating in regards to different parts of the animal. But liver I like, and if it's chicken liver, and kidney, not so much, but limited experience with that. And I used to eat a lot of hearts back in the day because that's really high in CoQ10. But liver is what I'm doing right now. I just made myself some chicken liver last week, and I've been having that last week or so. Really simple, too. I just made it with butter, heavy cream, salt and pepper, a little bit of parsley, and just pureed the whole thing together. And then I poured it into little jars and then poured chicken fat on top of it to kind of seal it off.
I have to say, in Georgia, we have, well, they're fried. They're not that good for you, but they're great. They're fried chicken livers, and you dip them in mustard. And I love them. I'm not going to lie. I love them. Being a white Russian and with some Ukrainian in my bloodline, I will tell you that I've had the liver cake that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it before. It was amazing. And actually, real Ukrainian kielbasa is actually has a lot of liver in it as well, which is very good stuff. As far as brains, I've actually had brains and eggs before for breakfast. When I was very, very young, on my mom's side of the family, they were German, and they were from the South. And my granddad on my mom's side, actually, you know, he was a farmer, and he actually cooked brains and eggs, and I tried it one time. So it was not really my cup of tea.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like pretty extreme when it comes to organs. Like, that's like the most hardcore you can get. Most of the time, liver is what you hear most people cooking, you know, liver and onions and, you know, stuff like that. But they're definitely coming back into fashion, this way of eating. I think for a while, people were just kind of put off by it. I think they were grossed out by it. But I think it's important nutrition, of course, coming from a clean animal, like a grass-fed animal. You wouldn't want to eat any meat really coming from a CAFO or a factory farm animal, but especially the organ meat. You want to make sure the organ meat comes from a good place. And the organs are usually dirt cheap. Like, liver is super cheap compared to like filet mignon or ribeye. You know, I mean, all these kind of odd bit pieces are always rather affordable. So that's, you know, a good thing right there if people are looking to save money. And they're so nutrient dense, you don't have to eat it every single day like you would muscle meat. You know, you have to eat it once a week or a couple of times a week. Like it says this article, Ukrainian people are eating organ meats 1 to 3 times a week. So yeah, it's like a supplemental type of food. But I've spoken to a bunch of people who are older than myself, who are more kind of, I guess, maybe older Gen Xers or boomers. And they grew up, even the older generations, they grew up eating liver like once a week or so. That was just what they did. That was, you know, the thing people did back in the day.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, one of my favorite dishes is liver and onions. I mean, I absolutely love it with gravy. And I eat that probably once a month. I love it. I cook it. It's incredible. I get the calf liver. Unbelievable. And the key to liver, folks, for those that have tried to cook it and don't like it, you have to let the liver marinate in buttermilk for 24 hours before you cook it. That gets rid of a lot of the toxins and the gaminess out of the liver. I'm a pretty good cook. I know what I'm talking about. You got to marinate. Same thing with venison. If you marinate it in buttermilk for 24 to 48 hours before you cook it, it makes it a whole lot better. Just a little tip there, Tabitha, I'm giving out.
Yeah, I've actually, the venison, I have not heard that. I have heard that about calamari, like squid rings, and I have heard it about liver. I've also heard you can soak the liver in water And I know that there's a Japanese dish called onkimo, which is monkfish liver. This is a great dish. They soak it in sake, in rice wine, and then it's steamed in cheesecloth.
Mm.
Yeah, it's really, really good. It has like a, it's very rich. It's kind of like a foie gras type of the sea. And they'll usually serve it with some wakame seaweed, daikon, scallions, and like a ponzu soy sauce type of thing. But yeah, I like that. It's a, I don't have it too often, but it's good.
Well, I have to say, speaking of brains and eating brains, we have zombies now in the news, Tabitha. I heard an NPR report that I downloaded. Hey, Sean, you got that NPR report? Vegan zombies terrorizing the West Coast. Let's go ahead and... listening to NPR, National Public Radio. I'm your host, Alex Greenstein, and this is All Kikes Considered. Today on All Kikes Considered, we have a very interesting program for you today. We're going to explore the bizarre world of vegan zombies. Yes, vegan zombies. And we're going to go to those communities that are the most hard hit by the rash of so-called vegan zombie attacks. Now, it seems that there are two strains of the vegan zombie. There is the left-wing Antifa vegan zombie that predominantly has been bringing about a bizarre reign of terror in the Portland, Oregon area. We will head to Portland, Oregon to explore these bizarre attacks. Also, we will explore the bizarre world of the racist vegan zombie that seems to be affecting rural areas of Oregon, mainly Eugene, suburban Seattle, and the suburban areas of Northern California. So stay tuned for this very important broadcast right here on NPR, National Public Radio. This is All Kikes Considered. I am Alex Greenstein. Let's explore the strange world of the vegan zombie. We arrived at the Walmart in Portland, Oregon, where we spoke with the manager of the Walmart outside of Portland, Oregon, where he described how these vegan Antifa come in to purchase black bandanas.
Yeah, well, they come in here, seems to be they come in here about once a month, and they order online a bunch of black bandanas, and I guess it's to cover up their face. But they're really weird, these vegan zombie Antifa. They come in here into the store And they usually order about 2 to 3 cases of black bandanas because we don't have enough on hand. And they come in, and it takes about 10 of these, I guess you could call them guys. I don't know. They kind of look funny. Some of them have man tits. I don't know whether they're men or women. You know, just trans stuff going on today. But it takes about 10 of them to carry one case of black bandanas. It is absolutely amazing. They are so weak. One came in last week, and he had a lettuce wrap in one hand and a communist manifesto in the other. And he came in asking for the case of black bandanas he'd ordered. And there must have been 10 fellers with him. And it took all 10 of them. They were so weak. They were so weak. They looked pale. Their skin was starting to chip off. It was amazing. It took 10 of them to carry one case of black bandanas out of their car. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. And I've been working here at this Walmart for 25 years. It is bizarre. And they come in here. Sometimes they go in the pharmacy section and they steal a bunch of vitamins, B12 vitamins and testosterone tablets. I guess they're not getting what they need, but it takes hell. One of them tried to steal a bottle of Rip Fuel, and it took he couldn't even get it off the shelf. He was so weak. And our security guard came and arrested him, and they had to put a special type of handcuff on him because his arms were so skinny. The motherfucker looked like E.T.
Unbelievable. And that report was from the Walmart outside of Portland, Oregon. Next in this very important expose of the vegan zombie, we headed to an Antifa rally that was taking place in Portland. And this was a bizarre day, to say the least. Our reporter, Mike Glasner, was there. Mike.
Yes, I went to the Antifa rally, and it was amazing. You know, they usually, in the past, Antifa has liked to threaten people on the right with bicycle locks. And they usually use the bicycle locks to bash people around the head. These vegan Antifas were so weak, they couldn't even pick up the bike lock. One tried to pick it up, and he just got pounced. He just got pounced. He got pounced by his own people. Seems like their brains are shrinking, and they don't even know who the enemy, who they're fighting anymore. They're just belligerent, walking through the streets. I think the combination of broccoli and smack is really getting to these people. These people are completely insane. Oh, my God, here comes another one. Oh, He's charging. He looks like he dropped a lettuce wrap. Oh, my God, there's the Communist Manifesto. Oh, he can't even lift the bike. He can't even pick up the Communist Manifesto off the ground. Oh, God.
Next, we headed to the fish market in Seattle, Washington, where a worker there describes a Antifa vegan zombie who was mad that he was selling fish, called him a fascist, and tried to bash him with a salmon.
Yeah, well, they came in here, and I just don't know. I've been working at the fish market for a long time, and it's just unbelievable. And I'm not a racist. I'm not a right or left. I'm I don't believe in the system at all. It's a joke. But this vegan zombie, again, came in. This is the third time this month they come to the fish market, and they yell at me, and they scream at me, and they tell me that I'm killing God's creatures, even though they don't believe in God. It's the most weird thing. And then their heads look like freaking dinosaurs. Like, they look like, they're just weird. They look strange, like Sleestaks from Land of the Lost. And they're wearing communist t-shirts, and they come in here with the black bandanas, and one tried to pick up a fresh salmon and beat me to death with it. Thank God he couldn't even lift the salmon off the ice rack. He was so weak. This guy was so weak, I tell you. Oh, God. Boy, do I miss the days of grunge and coffee.
Next, we took a trip through the bizarre world of the so-called
right-wing fascist vegan zombie. Yes, this zombie, this vegan zombieism, seems to be affecting both the right and the left in their reign of idiocracy terror. We head next to Eugene, Oregon, a rural area in Oregon, where it seems they are being terrorized by the right-wing fascist vegan zombie. We first went to a library, and we spoke with Ezra Goldstein about her encounter with the fascist vegan zombie variety.
I couldn't believe it! I've been a librarian here for over 35 years! Oy vey! And I couldn't believe it. It was a guy and a girl, and they came in here, and they were wearing Renegade Broadcasting t-shirts. And they went to the book section, the history section, and they tried to check out two copies of Mein Kampf. And that already, oy vey, set off red flags. red flags, oy. And they couldn't even, they had to call me to assist them, a Jew, call me to assist them to carry the two copies of Mein Kampf to the counter, because they couldn't even check them out. They were so weak. They were so weak. They couldn't even lift the two copies of Mein Kampf off the shelf. And then they started calling me a kike and a Jew because I had to carry the two copies of Mein Kampf to the counter. They had a... I saw them outside before they came in the library. They were eating lettuce wraps. And they looked emaciated. They looked sick. And they kept on Roman saluting and the Sieg Heiling. I felt so scared until I saw how weak they were. They couldn't even get the books off the shelf. Oy gewalt!
So it seems that the vegan zombie on both the right and the left seems to be a problem that will eventually lead from the West and permeate the rest of the country, as this disease of veganism seems to shrink the brain and weaken the human species. This has been a special report on NPR, National Public Radio. I am Alex Greenstein, and you have been listening to All Kikes Considered.
Yes, all kites. Just when you thought, Tabitha, when you thought it couldn't get any worse with the vegan zombies, I mean, that was from NPR directly.
Yeah, it's out there. Everyone knows now, right? Wow.
Anyway, this is the final segment here. Final thoughts, Tabitha. Go ahead. Spit it out.
What do I have to say? Final thoughts. Eat right, I would say. Yeah, take care of yourself. Don't have any fear of real food. And live as self-sufficiently and as close to the bone as possible. Don't support large companies, useless companies that just, you know, want your money or probably want you dead, you know. Just do your own thing and try to keep it local and small and self-sufficient.
You know, one of the things that I've come to the conclusion 2 years ago, when I was young growing up, my parents used to tell me, eat a balanced diet. God damn it, just eat a balanced diet. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Forget the extremes. I mean, balanced diet. You got a meat. You got a side. You got a vegetable. Hey, you got dinner. It's not hard, folks. Eat a balanced fucking diet. You need vegetables. You need meat. You need some carbs, not too many carbs. You got to balance everything out. And this gets us back to what we were talking about earlier, the radical center. The Oy Vey Jewish Bird of Prey pushes extremes on both sides. Radical veganism, radical meat-eating habits that are with no vegetables, with no any kind of carbs at all. You got to have a balance, folks. National Socialism was in the radical center. That's why it had to be destroyed. Anything in the radical center must be destroyed because it consists of logic and facts and not emotions and bullshit and propaganda. And remember, the left and the right are two birds of the same Jewish, are two wings of the same Jewish bird of prey. They are connected to the same Oy Vey bird that will kill you, Tabitha.
Yeah, and people didn't have all these worries about diet like even a couple of decades ago. Now it's just something that people are, everyone's like worried about it because it's all in your face all the time. Like, think about how they ate in the 50s. You know, it was simple, very, very simple. People just ate food, you know, and now it's there's so much confusion about is something healthy? What's in it? You know, it's just, it's ridiculous. It really is. But people, their senses have been kind of dulled down and they're kind of removed from nature. So it's easy to fall for all these things, especially when they kind of give a bit of a salvation mentality that comes along with it. And that's attractive to a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, I watch, I don't watch a lot of TV. I hardly watch it at all unless I'm doing research for a show. I might watch Fuck News, the Prune Juice Nursing Home Network, or CNN, the Communist News Network. But just for a little while, just to get some, to see what the propaganda is. But I watch a lot of old movies. I like movies from the 40s and 50s and 30s. I like a lot of black and white films, and even in the 60s, mm-hmm. you know. And people looked so much more healthier back then than they do today. And most of them smoked, most of them drank, but they lived a balanced life. They had a balanced diet. This is, you know, you look at the movies today and people look awful. They're either way too skinny or way too fat. And there's no in the middle. Remember the Hegelian dialectic. They destroyed the center tabula. Go ahead.
Yeah, especially like with the woman's body, either you have to be this like ridiculously like super skinny or like super muscular, or you're just like a fat blob. Like there's no like having like a healthy curvy body. Like that's, you know, that's out. Or if you do have a curvy body, it has to be like fake boobs, fake butt. Like, and it looks almost like they took a dump in their pants with those ass implants. It's horrifying. It's so nasty. Like, their ass is so dumpy, you know? No one's ass looks like that. Like, it's gross. Like, how about just having a normal, healthy body? And they have to get those ass and boob implants because their diet sucks and they can't grow those areas naturally.
Yeah, but, you know, it doesn't surprise me that the Jews would promote a diet that would look like you're taking a dump in your pants, since they're the kings of feces. Coming out of Tel Aviv, the doo-doo chasers coming out of Tel Aviv, they're absolutely disgusting. Ass worship is Judaism, and it's the Groids have taken it over with their rap music. All they care about is ass worship. It's disgusting, mm-hmm. by the way. Disgusting, yeah. By the way.
It started with that Baby Got Back song, probably like in, what, 90-something?
Come on, baby.
Yeah, that horrible song. One of the worst songs.
Yeah, I hear the music, Tabitha. It was an honor to have you on. Thanks for coming on the broadcast, and be sure to check out. Thanks, Tabitha, so much.
You've been listening. Thanks, Mike.
No problem. It's the News White People.
We need to open our eyes. There's over 2 million illegal immigrants bedding down in this state tonight. This state spent $3 billion last year on services for those people who had no right to be here in the first place. $3 billion. $400 million just to lock up a bunch of illegal immigrant criminals who only got into this country because the fucking INS decided it's not worth the effort to screen for convicted felons. Who gives a shit? Our government doesn't give a shit. Our border policy is a joke. So is anybody surprised that south of the border they're laughing at us? Laughing at our laws?
Yeah.
Every night, thousands of these parasites stream across the border like some fucking pinata exploding. Don't laugh. There's nothing funny going on here.